This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Eldest Curses, Book 1, The Red Scrolls of Magic, by Cassandra Clare and Wesley Chu. Read by B.D. Wong.
Because everyone deserves a great love story. Cassandra Clare. To Love, the Grandest Adventure. Wesley Chu. To desire immortality is to desire the eternal perpetuation of a great mistake. Arthur Schopenhauer. Now I see the mystery of your loneliness. William Shakespeare. Part 1. City of Love. You can't escape the past in Paris. Allen Ginsberg. Chapter 1. Collision in Paris. From the observation deck of the Eiffel Tower, the city was spread at Magnus Bain and Alec Lightwood's feet like a gift. The stars twinkled as if they knew they had competition. The cobbled streets were narrow gold, and the Seine was a silver ribbon twined around a filigree box of bonbons. Paris, city of boulevards and bohemians, of lovers and the Louvre. Paris had also been the setting for many of Magnus's most embarrassing mishaps and ill-conceived plots, and several romantic catastrophes, but the past did not matter now. This time, Magnus intended to get Paris right. In his 400 years of wandering the world, he had learned that wherever you traveled, it was the company that mattered. He looked across the small table at Alec Lightwood, who was ignoring the glitter and glamour of Paris in order to write postcards to his family back home, and smiled. Each time he finished a postcard, Alec wrote, "Wish you were here," at the end. And each time, Magnus snatched the card and wrote, with a flourish, except not really. Alec's broad shoulders were hunched over their table as he wrote. Runes flowed along the muscled strength of his arms, one rune already fading against his throat, just under the clean line of his jaw. A lock of his always disheveled black hair was falling into his eyes. Magnus had the fleeting impulse to reach over and push his hair back, but he repressed the urge. Alec was sometimes self-conscious about public displays of affection. There might be no shadow hunters here, but it was not as if all ordinary humans were totally accepting of such gestures either. Magnus wished they were. "Thinking deep thoughts?" Alec asked. Magnus scoffed. "I try not to." Enjoying life was essential, but sometimes it was an effort. Planning the perfect trip to Europe had not been easy. Magnus had been forced to invent several brilliant schemes single-handed. He could only imagine trying to describe his somewhat unique requirements to a travel agent. "Going somewhere?" she might ask when he called. "First holiday with my new boyfriend," Magnus might reply, since being able to tell the world he was dating Alec was a recent development, and Magnus liked to brag. "Very new. So new we still have that new car smell." So new that each was still learning the rhythms of the other, every glance or touch, a move in a territory both wonderful and strange. Sometimes he caught himself looking at Alec, or found Alec looking at him, with luminous shock. It was as though each of them had discovered something unexpected, but infinitely desirable. They were not yet sure of each other, but they wanted to be. Or at least, that was what Magnus wanted. "It's a classic love story. I hit on him at a party. He asked me out. Then we fought an epic magical battle between good and evil side by side. And now we need a vacation. The thing is, he's a shadow hunter," he would say. "Sorry, what?" his imaginary travel agent would ask. Oh, you know how it is. Back in the day, the world was being overrun with demons. Think Black Friday, with more rivers of blood and slightly fewer howls of desperation. As happens in times of despair for the noble and true, so never for me, an angel came. The angel gave to his chosen warriors and all their descendants the power of angels to defend mankind. He also gave them their own secret country. The angel Raziel was a big gift giver. The Shadowhunters continue their fight to this day. Invisible protectors, shining and virtuous. The actual non-ironic definition of holier than thou. It is incredibly annoying. They literally are holier than thou. Certainly holier than me, as I am demon spawn. Even Magnus could not think of what his travel agent would say to that. Probably she'd just whimper in confusion. Did I forget to mention, Magnus would go on, there are beings very different from Shadowhunters. There are downworlders, too. Alec is a child of the angel, and the son of one of the oldest families in Idris, the Nephilim home country. I'm sure his parents would not have been thrilled to see him squiring a fairy or a vampire or a werewolf about New York. I'm also certain they would have preferred that to a warlock. My kind are considered the most dangerous and suspect in Downworld. We are the children of demons, and I am the immortal child of a certain infamous greater demon. Though I may have forgotten to mention that fact to my boyfriend. Respectable Shadowhunters are not supposed to bring my sort home to meet Mom and Dad. I have a past. I have several pasts. Besides, good Shadowhunter boys aren't meant to bring home boyfriends at all. Only Alec had. He'd stood in the hall of his ancestors and kissed Magnus full on the mouth under the eyes of all the Nephilim assembled there. It had been the most profound and lovely surprise of Magnus's long life. We recently fought in a great war that averted disaster to all humankind. Not that humankind is grateful, since they don't know. We received neither glory nor adequate financial compensation, and suffered losses I cannot describe. Alec lost his brother, and I lost my friend, and both of us could really use a break. I fear the closest thing to treating himself Alec has ever experienced is buying a shiny new knife. I want to do something nice for him, and with him. I want to take a step away from the mess that is our lives, and see if we can work out a way to be really together. Do you have a recommended itinerary? Even in his head, the travel agent hung up on him. No. Magnus had been forced to plan out an elaborately romantic European getaway by himself. But he was Magnus Bane, glamorous and enigmatic. He could accomplish a trip of this kind in style. A warrior chosen by angels and a well-dressed demon's child, in love and intent on adventure through Europe? What could go wrong? Considering the issue of style, Magnus adjusted his crimson beret to a rakish angle. Alec looked up at the movement, then kept looking. "Do you want to wear a beret after all?" Magnus asked. "Say the word. I happen to have several berets concealed on my person, in a variety of colors. I'm a beret cornucopia." "I'm going to pass on the beret," said Alec. "Again? But thanks." The corners of his mouth curved upward, the smile uncertain, but real. Magnus propped his chin on his hand. He wanted to savor this moment of Alec, starlight, and possibility in Paris, and keep it to look at years in the future. He hoped the memory would not hurt later. "What are you thinking about?" Alec asked. "Seriously." "Seriously?" said Magnus. "You." Alec looked startled at the idea that Magnus might be thinking of him. He was both very easy and very difficult to surprise. Shadowhunter vision and reflexes were no joke. Whether it was coming around a corner or in the bed they shared, only to sleep for now, until or if Alec wanted anything else, Alec always anticipated him. Yet he could be caught off guard by something as small as knowing that he was in Magnus's thoughts. Right now, Magnus thought it was well past time for Alec to have a proper surprise. He just so happened to have one ready. Paris was the first stop on their trip. Perhaps it was a cliché to begin a romantic European vacation in the city of love, but Magnus believed classics were classics for a reason. They had been here almost a week, and Magnus felt it was time to put his own particular spin on things. Alec finished his last postcard, and Magnus reached for it, then let his hand drop. He read what Alec had written and smiled, charmed and surprised. On the postcard to his sister, Alec had added, "Wish you were here, except not really himself." He shot Magnus a tiny grin. "Ready for the next adventure?" Magnus asked. Alec looked intrigued, but he said, "You mean the cabaret? Our tickets are for 9 o'clock. We should check how long it'll take us to get there from here." It was very clear Alec had not been on a proper vacation before. He kept trying to plan the holiday as if they were going into battle. Magnus waved his hand lazily as if shooing a fly. "There's always time for the late show at the Moulin Rouge. Turn around." He pointed over the Shadow Hunter's shoulder. Alec turned. Drifting toward the Eiffel Tower, bobbing unsteadily against the crosswind, was a brightly striped purple and blue hot air balloon. In place of a basket, a table and two chairs rested on a wooden platform hanging below the balloon by four ropes. The table was set for two, and a rose sat in a thin vase at its center. A three-pronged candelabra completed the setting, although the wind swirling around the Eiffel Tower kept blowing out the candles. Annoyed, Magnus snapped his fingers, and all three candles lit up again. Said Alec, "can you fly a hot air balloon?" "Of course," Magnus declared. "Did I ever tell you about the time I stole a hot air balloon to rescue the Queen of France?" Alec grinned as if Magnus was making a joke. Magnus smiled back. Marie Antoinette had actually been quite a handful. "It's just," Alec said thoughtfully, "I've never even seen you drive a car." He stood to admire the balloon, which was glamored to be invisible. As far as the mundanes around them were concerned, Alec solemnly gazed at the open air. "I can drive. I can also fly and pilot and otherwise direct any vehicle you like. I'm hardly going to crash the balloon into a chimney," Magnus protested. "Uh-huh," said Alec, frowning. "You seem lost in thought," Magnus remarked. "Are you considering how glamorous and romantic your boyfriend is?"
"I'm considering," said Alec, "how to protect you if we crash the balloon into a chimney."
As he moved past Magnus, Alec stopped and pushed a wayward lock of hair off Magnus's brow. His touch was light, tender, but casual, as if he did not even realize he was doing it. Magnus had not even realized his own hair was in his eyes. Magnus ducked his head and smiled. Being taken care of was strange to him, but he thought perhaps he could get used to it. Magnus glamored the attention of mundane eyes away from him, and then he used his chair as a step and climbed onto the swaying platform. The moment he planted both feet on the floor, it felt as if he were standing on solid ground. He offered his hand. "Trust me." Alec hesitated, then accepted Magnus's hand. His grip was strong, his smile sweet.
"I do."
He followed Magnus, vaulting lightly over the railing onto the platform. They sat down at the table, and the balloon, ascending bumpily like a rowboat on a choppy ocean, drifted away unseen from the Eiffel Tower. Seconds later, they were floating high above the skyline as the sprawl of Paris expanded in every direction around them. Magnus watched Alec take in the city from 1,000 feet in the air. Magnus had been in love before, and it had gone wrong before. He'd been hurt and learned how to recover from the pain many times. Other lovers had told Magnus that he was impossible to take seriously, that he was terrifying, that he was too much, that he was not enough. Magnus might disappoint Alec. He probably would. If Alec's feelings did not last,
Magnus at least wanted this trip to be a good memory. He hoped this would be a foundation for something more, but if this was all they ever had, Magnus would make it count. The crystalline glow of the Eiffel Tower receded. People had not expected it to last, either. Yet there it stood, the blazon of the city. There was a sudden strong gust of wind. The platform tilted, and the balloon plummeted 50 feet. They spun against the crosswind for several rotations before Magnus made an emphatic gesture, and the balloon righted itself. Alec glanced over, with a small frown, clutching the arms of his chair. "So, how do you work the controls on this thing?"
"No idea," Magnus called back cheerfully. "I was just going to use magic."
The hot air balloon passed over L'Arc de Triomphe with inches to spare and made a sharp turn to head toward the Louvre, dipping low over the tops of buildings. Magnus did not feel as carefree as he wished to appear. It was an awfully windy day. Keeping the balloon upright, steady, headed in the right direction, and invisible was a greater strain than he cared to admit, and he still had dinner to serve, and he had to keep relighting the candles. Romance was a lot of work. Below, dark leaves hung heavy on the red brick walls along the riverbank, and streetlights shone pink and orange and blue amid the white-painted buildings and narrow cobbled streets. On the other side of the balloon lay the Jardin des Tuileries, its round pond staring up at them like an eye, and the glass pyramid of the Louvre, a beam of red light cutting through its center. Magnus thought suddenly of how the Paris Commune had set the Tuileries on fire, remembered ash rising in the air and the blood on the guillotine. This was a city bearing the stains of long history and old sorrows. Through Alec's clear eyes, Magnus hoped it would be washed clean. He snapped his fingers, and a bottle chilling in an ice bucket materialized next to the table.
"Champagne?"
Alec shot out of his chair. "Magnus, you see that plume of smoke down there? Is that a fire?"
"So that's a no to champagne?"
The shadow hunter pointed at an avenue running parallel to the Seine. "There's something weird about that smoke. It's drifting against the wind." Magnus waved his champagne flute.
"Nothing the pompier can't handle."
"Now the smoke is jumping across the rooftops. It just made a right turn. Now it's hiding behind a chimney."
Magnus paused. "I'm sorry."
"Okay, the smoke has just leaped over Rue de Pyramide." Alec squinted.
"You recognize the Rue de Pyramide from up here?"
Alec looked at Magnus, surprised. "I studied the maps of the city very closely before we left," said Alec, "to prepare." Magnus was reminded again of the fact that Alec prepared for a vacation like he was preparing for a Shadowhunter mission, because this was his first ever vacation. He eyed the thick black plume drifting into the evening sky, hoping Alec was wrong and they could return to his planned evening of romance. But Alec was unfortunately not wrong. The cloud was too black and too compact. Its plumes extended like solid tentacles fluttering in the air, blatantly ignoring the wind that should have dispersed them. Under the trails of smoke, he saw a sudden gleam. Alec was at the edge of the platform, leaning alarmingly far over the side. "There are two people chasing the smoke thing. I think those are Seraph blades. They're shadow hunters."
"Hooray, shadow hunters," said Magnus.
"Present company accepted from my sarcastic hooray, of course." He stood, and with a decisive gesture, brought the balloon rapidly lower in altitude, recognizing with some disappointment the need to get a closer look. His vision was not as keen as Alec's rune-enhanced sight, but beneath the smoke he could soon make out two dark shapes, running along the Paris rooftops in hot pursuit. Magnus discerned a woman's face, uplifted to the sky and shining pale as a pearl. A long plait trailed behind her as she ran, like a snake of silver and gold. The two shadow hunters were going desperately fast. The smoke eddied down a block of commercial buildings and over a narrow road and spilled onto an apartment complex, dodging skylights and piping and ventilation shafts. All the while, the shadow hunters pursued, slicing at any black tentacles that whipped too close. Inside the dark maelstrom of smoke, a crowd of yellow lights, like fireflies, swarmed in pairs. "Iblis demons," muttered Alec, seizing his bow and knocking an arrow. Magnus had groaned when he realized Alec was taking his bow with him to their dinner.
"How could you possibly need to shoot anything with a bow and arrow at the Eiffel Tower?" he'd said.
Alec had just smiled gently and, with a small shrug, strapped the weapon in place. Magnus knew better than to suggest they let the Paris Shadow Hunters take care of whatever irritating demonic disaster was unfolding. Alec was congenitally incapable of turning away from a good cause. It was one of his most appealing qualities. They were closer to the rooftops now. The platform swayed dangerously as Magnus skirted around chimneys, cable wires, and roof stairwells. The wind was dangerously strong. Magnus felt as if he were fighting the whole sky. The balloon wobbled, swinging side to side, and the ice bucket tumbled over. Magnus managed to just avoid crashing into a tall chimney stack as he watched the champagne bottle roll off the edge. It exploded in a spray of glass and foam as it impacted the roof below. He opened his mouth to make a remark about the sad waste of champagne. "Sorry about the champagne," said Alec. "I hope it wasn't one of your most prized bottles or anything." Magnus laughed, Alec anticipating him yet again. "I only bring the medium-prized bottles to drink on a dangling platform 1,000 feet in the air." He overcompensated for the wind a bit too much, and the platform swung dangerously in the other direction like a pendulum, nearly putting a hole in a giant billboard. He righted the balloon hastily and checked on the situation below. The swarm of Iblis demons had split in two, encircling the Shadow Hunters on the roof below. The unlucky pair were trapped, though they continued fighting valiantly. The fair-haired woman moved like cornered lightning. The first Iblis demon that leaped at them was cut down by a slice of her seraph blade, as were the second and third. But there were too many. As Magnus watched, a fourth demon launched itself toward the Shadow Hunter woman, its glowing eyes streaking through the darkness. Magnus glanced at Alec, and Alec nodded at him. Magnus used a great deal of his magic to hold the hot air balloon perfectly still for just a moment. Alec let his first arrow fly. The Iblis demon never reached the woman. The glow from its eyes dimmed as its smoky body dissipated, leaving behind nothing but an arrow embedded into the ground. Three more demons suffered a similar fate. Alec's hands were a blur, raining arrow after arrow at the swarm below. Any time a pair of glowing eyes moved toward the Shadow Hunters, a streaking arrow would meet it before it could reach them. It was a pity Magnus had to devote his attention to controlling the elements rather than admiring his boyfriend. The rear guard of the Iblis demons turned toward the new threat in the sky. Three broke off their attack on the Shadow Hunters and launched themselves toward the balloon. Two were dropped by arrows before they could make it onto the platform, but Alec was too late to draw on the third. The demon, gaping maw exposing a row of sharp black teeth, struck at Alec. But Alec had already dropped the bow and drawn a seraph blade. "Curiel," said Alec, and the blade lit up with angelic power. The runes on his body shimmered as he thrust the blade through the Iblis demon and sliced, separating head from body. The demon crumbled away into black ash. Another group of demons reached the platform and quickly met a similar fate. This was what Shadow Hunters did, what Alec was born to do. His body was a weapon, graceful and swift, an instrument honed to slay demons and shield his loved ones. Alec was very good at both. Magnus's skills were more in the areas of magic and passion sense. He ensnared one demon in a web of electricity and held off another with an invisible barrier made of wind. Alec shot the demon Magnus was holding off, then shot the last demon lingering below. At this point, the fair-haired Shadow Hunter woman and her male companion had nothing left to do. They were standing in a world of smoky ash and destruction and appeared somewhat at a loss. "You're welcome," Magnus called down to them, waving. "No charge."
"Magnus," said Alec. "Magnus!"
The note of real alarm in Alec's voice was what made Magnus aware that the wind had slipped out of his grasp, even before he felt the lurch of the balloon platform beneath their feet. Magnus made a last frantic, futile gesture, and Alec rushed at him, curling his body around Magnus's.
"Brace for—"
Alec shouted in his ear, as the balloon careened down toward Earth and, more specifically, a theater marquee with Carmen spelled across the front in brilliant yellow bulbs. Magnus Bane did his best in life to always be spectacular. This crash was. Chapter 2. Stars Spell Your Name. Just as the platform was about to plow into the letter R, Alec clutched a fistful of Magnus's sleeve, yanked him into a rough embrace, and launched them both over the side of the platform. The glittering sky and glittering city changed places as the world spun, He lost track of up and down until down got his full attention by hitting hard. An instant of dark followed, then he found himself lying on the grass, cradled in Alec's arms. Magnus blinked stars out of his eyes just in time to see the balloon smash into the marquee, causing an impressive explosion of sparks and splinters. The gas flame that had been keeping it aloft lurched, and the balloon rapidly deflated as it and the marquee caught fire. People were already massing across the street to gawk. The distinctive beep-boop of Parisian police sirens became audible and quickly grew louder. Some things couldn't be glamored away. Strong hands pulled Magnus to his feet.
Are you all right?
Surprisingly, he was. Falling safely from absurd heights was apparently one of the Shadow Hunter's many skills. Magnus was more shaken by Alec's look of concern than he was by the crash. Magnus found himself wanting to glance over his shoulder to find who the look was really directed at, not altogether able to believe it was for him. Magnus had been dodging death for centuries. He was not used to anyone worrying this much about his near misses.
"Can't complain," said Magnus, adjusting his cuffs.
"If I did, I would only be doing so for attention from a handsome gentleman." Fortunately, Carmen was not being performed tonight, so there appeared to be no injuries. The two got to their feet and stared at the wreckage. They were thankfully invisible to the gathering crowd, who would soon be mystified at the balloon's apparent lack of passengers. The air became quiet, and then the marquee dipped and squealed as the fire finished eating through the remaining supports and sent the entire thing crashing to the ground, sending a fresh plume of smoke and sparks into the air. Several in the crowd moved back cautiously, but continued to take photos.
"I admit," said Magnus, tugging at a torn piece of shirt fluttering in the wind, "this evening isn't going exactly to plan."
Alec looked glum.
"Sorry about ruining our night."
"Nothing is ruined. The night is young, and reservations are available," said Magnus. "The theater will receive a generous donation from an unknown patron to effect the repairs necessary after this freak accident. We are about to enjoy a nighttime stroll through the most romantic city on Earth. Seems an excellent night to me. Evil has been defeated, which is nice too."
Alec frowned. "Seeing that many Iblis demons gathered together is unusual."
"We have to leave some evil for the Paris Institute to amuse themselves with. It would be gauche for us to hog all the evil to fight. Besides, we are on vacation. Carpe diem. Seize the day, not the demons." Alec conceded the issue with a shrug and a small smile. "Also, you are just great with that bow, and it is very, very attractive," Magnus added. In his opinion, Alec needed to be complimented more. Alec looked taken aback, but not displeased. "All right. Now, new clothes. If one of the Paris Fae sees me looking like this, my reputation will be toast for a century."
"I don't know," Alec said shyly. "I like how you look."
Magnus beamed, but remained determined. A hot air balloon crash was not how he had pictured his clothing getting torn on this trip. To Rue Saint-Honoré, then, for a quick wardrobe refresh. They breezed through several stores that were open late, or that could be persuaded to open for a long-time valued customer. Magnus selected a red velvet paisley blazer over a rust-red ruffled shirt, while Alec could not be talked into anything more elaborate than a dark-striped hoodie under a loose-fitting leather jacket with a few too many zippers. This accomplished, Magnus made a few calls and was pleased to tell Alec that they would be dining at the chef's table in A Midsummer Night's Dining, the hottest fairy restaurant in the city. From outside, it looked ordinary, with a quaint brickwork and plaster facade. Inside, it resembled a fairy grotto. Luxuriant emerald green moss carpeted the ground, and the walls and roof were irregular stone like that of a cavern. Vines emerged like snakes from the trees and drifted among the tables, and several of the customers were chasing their food, as their meals had levitated from their plates and were making a break for freedom.
"It always feels weird to order fairy restaurant food," Alec mused once they ordered their salads. "I mean, I do in New York all the time, but I know those places. The Shadow Hunter's Codex says never to eat any fairy foods, under any circumstances." This place is perfectly safe, Magnus said, munching on one of the leaves as it tried to crawl out of his mouth. Perfectly mostly safe. As long as we are paying for the meal, it is not considered an offering, but a purchase. The financial transaction makes all the difference. It's a fine line, but isn't that always the case when it comes to the fair folk? Don't let your salad get away. Alec laughed and stabbed at his fairy caprese. Those shadow hunter reflexes yet again, Magnus noted. Magnus had always been careful, with mundane lovers, to minimize their interaction with Downworld, for their safety and their peace of mind. He'd always assumed that Shadowhunters would want to minimize their interaction with Downworld, too. They held themselves apart, declaring themselves not mundane, but not of Downworld either. A third thing, rather, separate and maybe even a little bit better. But Alec seemed glad to be here, not taken aback by any of Paris or Magnus's world. It was possible, maybe, that Alec might be as happy as Magnus was, just to be together. He linked elbows with Alec as they left the restaurant, feeling the hard muscle of the Shadowhunter's arm against his. Alec would be ready to fight again in an instant, but in this moment, he was simply relaxed. Magnus leaned in. They turned onto the Quai de Valmy and encountered a strong headwind. Alec threw on his hood, zipped up his jacket, and pulled Magnus closer. Magnus led him along as they walked through the Canal Saint-Martin neighborhood, following the waterway as it bent around the corner. Couples strolled along the shore, and small clusters of people chatted on picnic blankets at the water's edge. A merman in a fedora had joined one group of picnickers. Magnus and Alec walked underneath the blue iron footbridge. On the other side of the canal, violin music accompanied by percussion filled the air. The mundanes of Paris would be able to hear the mortal drummer, but only people like Magnus and Alec could see and hear the fairy violinist spinning around him, with flowers in her hair sparkling like gems. Magnus guided Alec away from the busy canal and down a quieter street. The moon painted a row of squat gray houses sandwiched side by side with a pale glow that split into a kaleidoscope of silver among the wavering trees. They turned at random intersections, letting chance be their guide. Magnus could feel his blood coursing through his veins. He felt alive. He felt awake. He hoped Alec was as electrified as he was. Cool wind stroked the back of Magnus's neck, prickling his skin. For a moment, he felt something strange. An itch, a nagging sensation, a presence. He stopped in his tracks and looked back the way they'd come. Magnus watched the crowds move past. He still felt it, eyes watching, ears listening, or possibly thoughts focused on him floating in the air. "Something wrong?" asked Alec. Magnus realized he had pulled away from Alec, ready to face a threat alone. He shook off his unease. "What could be wrong?" he asked. "I'm with you." He reached for Alec and laced their fingers together. Alec's calloused palm pressed tight against his own. Alec held himself more at ease in the night than during the day. Possibly he felt more comfortable hidden from the view of even those with the sight. Perhaps all shadow hunters felt more at home in the shadows. They stopped just inside the entrance of the Parc de Butte Chaumont. The glow from the city lights gave the horizon a soft brown hue as it merged with the blackness of the night sky, punctuated only by the moon. Magnus pointed at a faint cluster of stars sparkling to his right. "There's Boertis, the Bear Watcher, and Corona, and Hercules next to it." "Why is it supposed to be romantic to point out stars?" Alec said, but with a smile on his face. "Look, that one is Dave, the hunter, and that one is the frog and the helicopter. I don't know constellations, sorry." "It's romantic because it's sharing knowledge about the world," said Magnus. "The one who knows about stars teaches the one who doesn't know." "That's romantic," Alec said. "I don't think there's anything I can teach you." He was still smiling, but Magnus felt a pang. "Sure there is," said Magnus. What's that on the back of your hand? Alec lifted his hand and examined it as if it were new to him. It's a rune. You've seen them before.
I know the basic idea. You draw the runes on your skin, you get powers, said Magnus. I'm not all that clear on the details. Humor me. The mark on your hand is the first one you get, right?
Yes, Alec said slowly. Voyance. That's the rune they usually put first on Shadowhunter children. The rune to verify that they can bear runes at all. And it lets you see through glamour, which is always useful. Magnus looked at the shadowy curve of an eye against Alec's pale skin. Glamours protected downworlders. Shadowhunters needed to see through glamours because downworlders were potential threats. Did Alec not think the same thought when he looked at the mark on his hand? Or was he simply kind enough not to speak it? To protect Magnus, as he had protected him in the fall from the balloon. Strange, thought Magnus. But sweet. What about this one, he said, and found himself trailing an index finger down the curve of Alec's bicep, watching Alec shiver at the unexpected intimacy of the gesture. Alec looked Magnus in the eyes.
Accuracy, he said.
So I have this one to thank for your skills with the bow. He used his hold on Alec's hand to draw him in, so they met in the middle of the path under the soft shine of the moon. He leaned over to plant a small kiss on Alec's arm.
Thanks, he whispered. And this one?
Now he grazed his fingers along the side of Alec's throat. Alec's shuddering breath broke the soft stillness of the night. His arm snaked around Magnus's waist, pressing their bodies tighter together, and Magnus felt Alec's heart pounding through his shirt.
Equilibrium, Alec said breathlessly. Keeps me steady on my feet.
Magnus bowed his head and laid his lips gently on the rune, faded to silvery, almost invisibility against the smooth skin of Alec's neck. Alec inhaled sharply. Magnus slid his mouth along warm skin until he reached Alec's ear and purred.
I don't think it's working. I don't want it to, Alec murmured.
He turned his face into Magnus's and caught Magnus's mouth with his own. Alec kissed as he did all things, so dedicated and wholehearted he swept Magnus away. Magnus curled his hand in the soft leather of Alec's jacket and saw through his eyelashes new skin being bared to the moonlight. Another rune, filigreed like a musical note, was inscribed below the dip of Alec's collarbone. Magnus said in a low voice, And what's that one? Alec answered,
Stamina?
Magnus stared.
Are you serious?
Alec began to grin.
Yeah.
Really, though, Magnus said. I want to be clear on this. You're not just saying that to be sexy.
No,
Alec answered, his voice husky, and swallowed.
But I'm glad if it is.
Magnus laid his rings against the space beneath Alec's collarbone and saw Alec shiver at the cool touch of metal. He traced up the back of Alec's neck and palmed the back of his head to pull him close again. As he did, Magnus whispered,
God, I love shadow hunters.
Alec said again,
I'm glad.
His mouth was soft and warm, a contradiction with his strong hands, until it was not, until the kiss became both encircling comfort and burning urgency. Magnus pulled back eventually, gasping for breath, because the other choice was pulling Alec down into the grass and the dark. He couldn't do that. Alec had never done anything like this before. On their first night in Paris, Magnus had woken in the early hours to find Alec still awake and pacing the floor. He knew that Alec must worry sometimes about what he'd gotten himself into. The decision about whether to take things further had to be entirely Alec's. Alec asked in a strained voice,
Do you think we could skip the cabaret?
What cabaret? said Magnus. They took off, out of the park and toward the general direction of Magnus's apartment, stopping twice because they got turned around by the narrow streets of the city, and twice more to make out in dimly lit alleys. They would have become a great deal more lost if not for Alec's keen sense of direction. Shadow hunters were so useful when traveling. Magnus planned to never again leave home without one. He had been a revolutionary and a bad painter in this apartment. Had been robbed of his life savings here in the 18th century. It was the first time he had been rich and had lost everything. Magnus had lost everything a few more times since then. These days, he was based in Brooklyn, and the Paris apartment stood empty, save for the memories. He kept it for sentimental reasons, and because trying to find a hotel during Paris Fashion Week was its own special bonus level of hell. Not bothering with keys, Magnus flicked a finger at the front door and used what little magic reserves he had left to swing it open. He and Alec entered the building, still kissing, patching up against the walls and stumbling up four flights of stairs. His apartment door slammed open with a loud bang, and they spilled inside. The velvet blazer didn't even make it inside his apartment since Alec tore it off and dropped it in the hallway just short of the front door. As they crossed the threshold, he was ripping Magnus's shirt open. Cufflinks and buttons chimed distantly against the floorboards. Magnus was savagely unzipping the leather jacket as he pressed Alec against the arm of the sofa and tipped him over onto the cushions. Alec fell with easy grace onto his back, pulling Magnus down on top of him. Magnus kissed the equilibrium rune, then the stamina rune. Alec's body arched beneath him and his hands tightened on Magnus's shoulders. Alec's voice was insistent as he said, "Something, something, Magnus, something, something." "Alexander," Magnus murmured back and felt Alec's body surge underneath his in response. Alec's hands locked on his shoulders. Magnus studied him with sudden concern. Alec, wide-eyed, was staring off to the side. "Magnus, over there." Magnus followed Alec's gaze and realized they had company. There was a figure sitting on the purple love seat opposite them. In the shimmer of city lights through the window, Magnus saw a woman with a cloud of brown hair, startled gray eyes, and the beginnings of a familiar wry smile. Magnus said, "Tessa?" Chapter 3, The Crimson Hand. The three of them sat in the living room in uncomfortable silence. Alec was sitting on the other end of the sofa, far from Magnus. Nothing was going according to plan tonight. "Tessa," Magnus said again, marveling, "aren't you unexpected and uninvited?" Tessa sat and sipped her tea, looking perfectly composed. Since she was one of Magnus's dearest and oldest friends, he felt it would be nice if she looked even slightly apologetic. She did not. "You told me once that you would not forgive me if I didn't drop by whenever I found myself in the same city as you." "I would have forgiven you," Magnus said with conviction. "I would have thanked you." Tessa glanced Alec's way. Alec was blushing. The ends of Tessa's lips curled up, but she was kind and hid her smile beneath her teacup.
"Call it even," said Tessa. "You once walked in on me in an embarrassing situation with a gentleman in a mountain fortress, after all." Her half-concealed smile flickered. She looked again at Alec, who had inherited his coloring from shadow hunters long gone. Shadow hunters Tessa had loved.
"You should let that go," Magnus advised.
Tessa was a warlock like Magnus, and like Magnus, she was used to overcoming the memory of what had been loved and lost. They were in the long-time habit of comforting each other. She took another sip of tea, her smile restored as if it had never been gone.
"I certainly have let it go," she replied. "Now."
Alec, who was watching this back and forth as if sitting center court in a tennis match, raised a hand.
"I'm sorry, but did you two used to date?"
That
stopped the conversation dead in its tracks.
Both Tessa and Magnus turned to him with identical looks of shock.
You seem more horrified than I do, Magnus told Tessa, and somehow I am deeply wounded.
Tessa gave Magnus a tiny smile, then turned to Alec.
Magnus and I have been friends for more than 100 years.
Okay, said Alec. So this is a friendly visit?
There was an edge to his voice that made Magnus raise an eyebrow. Alec was sometimes uncomfortable around new people. Magnus supposed that explained his tone.
Magnus was so obviously embarrassingly infatuated, there was no way Alec could possibly be jealous.
Tessa sighed. The light of amusement in her gray eyes died away.
I wish this was a friendly visit, she said softly. It's not.
She shifted in her seat, moving a little stiffly. Magnus's eyes narrowed.
Tessa, he said,
are you hurt?
Nothing that won't heal, she said.
Are you in trouble?
She gave him a long, unreadable look.
No,
said Tessa.
You are.
What do you mean? Alec asked, his voice suddenly urgent. Tessa bit her lip.
Magnus, she said, can I talk to you alone?
You can talk to us both, said Magnus. I trust Alec.
Very quietly, Tessa asked,
do you trust him with your life?
With someone else, Magnus would have thought they were being overdramatic. Tessa wasn't like that. What she said, she usually meant.
Yes, Magnus said, with my life.
Many downworlders would never have told secrets to a shadow hunter, no matter what Magnus said, but Tessa was different. She grabbed a worn leather satchel by her feet, brought out a wax-sealed scroll, and unrolled it.
The Spiral Council has issued a formal demand that you, Magnus Bane, High Warlock of Brooklyn, neutralize the human cult of demon worshippers known as the Crimson Hand. Immediately.
I understand that the Spiral Council wants the best, Magnus said modestly. I can't say I care for their tone. I've heard of the Crimson Hand. They're a joke. They're a bunch of humans who like to party wearing demon masks. They're more interested in doing body shots than demon worship. I'm on vacation and I won't be bothered with this nonsense. Tell the Spiral Council I will be giving my cat, Chairman Meow, a bath.
The Spiral Council was the closest thing warlocks had to a governing body, but it was secretive and not entirely official. In general, warlocks had issues with authority. Magnus had more than most. A shadow touched Tessa's face.
Magnus, I had to beg the council to let me come to you.
Yes, the Crimson Hand has always been a joke. But it appears they have a new leader, someone who has whipped them into shape. They've gotten powerful, have deep pockets, and have been recruiting heavily. There have been several deaths and far more disappearances. A dead fairy was found in Venice next to a pentagram painted with her blood.
Magnus started and forced himself to be still.
Tessa didn't have to spell it out for him. They both knew fairy blood could be used to summon greater demons, who had once been among the highest of angels and who had fallen so far. Unspoken between Tessa and Magnus was their knowledge that they were each the child of a different greater demon. Magnus felt a certain kinship with Tessa as a result. There were very few children of greater demons around. Magnus hadn't told Alec that his father was a prince of hell. It seemed bound to put a crimp in any new relationship.
Is that so? Magnus asked, trying to keep his voice neutral.
If this cult is mixed up with trying to raise a greater demon, that is very bad news for the cult and potentially for many other innocents.
Tessa nodded, leaning forward.
The Crimson Hand is clearly poised to cause chaos in the Shadow World, so the Spiral Council sent me to deal with them. I was impersonating one of their acolytes at their headquarters in Venice, trying to find out what they were up to and who their leader might be. But then, during one of their rituals, I was exposed to a potion that made me lose control of my shape-shifting abilities. I barely escaped with my life. When I returned a few days later, the cult had abandoned the place. You need to find them.
As I so often say, Magnus remarked, why me?
Tessa was not smiling now.
I don't give it a lot of credence. But the rumor in Downworld is that the Crimson Hand's new leader isn't actually new. People are saying their original founder has returned.
And who, may I ask, is their founder?
Tessa took out a photo and slapped it down on the table. The photo was of a painting drawn on a wall. The painting was crude, amateurishly drawn, almost as if by a child. It depicted several images of a man with dark hair lounging on a throne. Next to him were two people fanning him with palm leaves, while a third knelt in front of him. No, not bowing, but giving him what appeared to be a foot rub. Even roughly painted, they could all recognize the cult founder's jet-black hair, etched cheekbones, and yellow, cat-like eyes.
They call their founder the Great Poison, Tessa said. Look familiar? Magnus, people are saying that you are the original founder and the new leader of the Crimson Hand.
A chill passed through Magnus. Then indignation took over. Tessa, I most certainly did not found a cult, he protested. I don't even like demon worshippers. They're boring idiots who worship boring demons. He paused. It's the kind of thing I would joke about, really. He paused again. Not that I would. Even as a prank. I would never... He trailed off.
You would joke about starting a cult that worshipped demons? Alec asked.
Magnus gestured helplessly.
I would joke about anything.
Mundanes had a phrase for when they didn't remember something. Doesn't ring a bell. This was the opposite of that. A cult called the Crimson Hand. A joke long ago. It rang through him, almost exactly like a bell. He remembered telling a joke centuries ago. Ragnar Fell had been there. He was almost sure. He remembered a hot day and a very long night. He remembered nothing else. Magnus drew in a deep breath and forced himself to remain calm. His old friend Ragnar was dead now, a casualty of the recent war. Magnus had been trying not to think about that too much. Now there was a gap in his own memories. Keeping centuries of life clear in your mind was difficult, but Magnus could tell the difference between memory that was clouded and memory that had been scythed away. He had cast spells to cloud and remove memories before. Warlocks did it for each other sometimes, to help their friends get through the trials presented by immortality. Why would he have had memories of a demon-worshipping cult that were removed? Who would have removed them? He did not dare look in Alec's direction.
Tessa, he said carefully, are you sure you haven't become confused by the Great Poison's handsome face and dashing demeanor?
There's a painting on the wall, said Alec, his voice calm and factual. You're wearing the same jacket in both pictures.
Rather than look at Alec, Magnus looked at the painting, which was of himself and his fellow warlocks Ragnar Fell and Katarina Loss. A werewolf acquaintance of an artistic persuasion had painted the picture, so none of their warlock marks were masked with glamour. Katarina was in a low-cut dress, showing a good deal of beautiful blue skin, and Ragnar's horns curved in a forest of pomaded curls, his green face a contrast with his white cravat like spring leaves against snow. The corners of Magnus's glowing cat eyes were crinkled as he smiled. Magnus had always treasured this painting. And he was wearing the same jacket in both pictures. He considered but rejected the possibility that the Great Poison had coincidentally owned the same jacket. It had been custom made for him as a thank you by the Russian Tsar's personal tailor. It seemed unlikely Dmitri would have made a second one for some random cult leader.
I can't remember anything about the Crimson Hand, Magnus said, but memories can be tampered with. I think mine might have been.
Magnus, said Tessa, I know you are not the leader of a demon-worshipping cult, but not everyone in the Spiral Labyrinth knows you like I do. They think you might be the one doing this.
They wanted to go to the Shadow Hunters. I persuaded the Spiral Labyrinth to give you the chance to stop the cult and prove your innocence before they get any of the institutes involved.
I wish I could do more, but I can't.
That's all right, Magnus said. He didn't want to worry Tessa, so he forced his voice into breeziness, though he felt more like a storm. I can handle this on my own. He hadn't looked at Alec in some time. He wondered if he would ever have the courage to look at Alec again. According to all the laws of the Accords, the Shadow Hunters should have been told about the demonic cult and the murders and the warlock suspect immediately. Tessa was the one who looked at Alec.
Magnus didn't do it,
she assured him. Alec said,
I don't need you to tell me that.
Tension eased out of Tessa's shoulders. She placed her cup on the side table and stood up. Her gaze lingered on Alec and her smile spread, warm and sweet, and Magnus understood. She was seeing within him not just Will, but Cecily and Anna and Christopher, generations of beloved faces now gone.
It was a pleasure meeting you, Alexander.
Alec, said Alec. He was studying Tessa closely in return.
Alec, said Tessa, I wish I could stay and help, but I must return to the labyrinth as quickly as possible. They're opening a portal for me. Please take care of Magnus.
Excuse me? Asked Magnus, startled.
Of course I will, said Alec. Tessa, before you go, you look familiar. Have we met before?
Tessa stood, looking down at him. Her face was serious and kind.
No, she said. But I hope we meet again. She turned toward the back wall, where a portal was opening, illuminating the furniture and the lamps and the windows with an uncanny light.
Through the curving doorway of light cut out of the air, Magnus could see the infamously uncomfortable chairs of the Spiral Labyrinth's receiving room.
Whoever the cult's new leader is, Tessa said, pausing before the portal. Be careful. I think it must be a warlock. I did not learn much, but even as an acolyte of the cult, I encountered powerful wards and saw spells turned aside as if they were nothing. They have a sacred book they spoke of, called the Red Scrolls of Magic. I was not able to get a copy.
I'll ask around at the Paris Shadow Market, said Magnus.
They are watching for magic, so avoid traveling by portal whenever possible, Tessa said.
You're using a portal right now, said Magnus, amused. Always do as I say and not as I do, I see. Will you be safe?
Tessa was more than a century old, but she was so much younger than Magnus, and he had known her almost her whole life. He had never stopped feeling protective of her.
I'm headed for the Spiral Labyrinth and staying there. It's always safe there. You, on the other hand, will probably be headed to more dangerous places. Good luck. Also, sorry about your vacation.
You shouldn't apologize, said Magnus.
Tessa blew him a kiss as she stepped through the portal, and both she and its bright glow vanished from Magnus's living room. Magnus and Alec didn't move for several beats. Magnus still could not bring himself to look directly at Alec. He was too afraid of what he would see on Alec's face. He stood in the middle of his Paris apartment with the man he loved and felt very alone. Magnus had harbored such high hopes for this getaway. It was only the start of their vacation, and now Magnus had an awful secret he was conspiring with a downworlder friend to keep from Shadow Hunters. Worse than that, he could not swear to Alec that he was entirely innocent. He could not remember. Magnus couldn't blame Alec if he was reconsidering the entire relationship. Date me, Alec Lightwood. Your parents hate me. I don't fit into your world. And you won't like mine, and we won't be able to go on a romantic vacation without my dark past casting a shadow over our whole future. Magnus wanted them to get to know each other better. Magnus had a hard-won high opinion of himself, and he had an even higher opinion of Alec. He had thought he had unearthed every dark secret, wrestled every demon, accepted every personal flaw.
the possibility that there might be secrets about